Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in with another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. And today is February 27th, 2014. And I'm here with Christy Marsan, who has established a successful counseling practice in Las Vegas, Nevada, as a licensed marriage and family therapist. And she also is the author of Love, Hugs, and Hope When Scary Things Happen. Christy, how are you today?
I am wonderful, Technisha. Thank you for having me on your show.
You're so welcome. It's an honor. I'm thankful that you consented to be on this show. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Christy, give a little bit details about yourself.
Well, I practiced for many years in Las Vegas, Nevada, as a licensed marriage and family therapist. My husband and I raised six children, and after my children were all in school, I decided I'd go back and get my master's degree. I needed to find a direction in my life and do the things that I wanted to do for myself, and so I went back and got my master's degree and developed a counseling practice there, which I thoroughly enjoyed and was wonderful. And we're retired now, both my husband and I, and I've always wanted to write, and so I've written a couple of self-help books, and I have a third one that's coming out in June, and so I just am having a wonderful time of my life. This is great. I recommend it to everybody.
Well, that's the way to do it, and you're also a grandmother as well.
Yes.
Well, you look good to be a grandmother.
Well, you're very nice, but my wrinkles do show.
Hey, that just lets you know you live the prosperous life. That's all. Hey. Christy, now the book Love, Hugs, and Hope When Scary Things Happen, you wrote that right after the Sandy Hook, right?
Yes, I did. It was personal to me because several days before the Sandy Hook incident, there was a shooting in the Clackamas Town Center in Oregon, in Portland, Oregon. And my kids live about a mile from that, and so my daughter and son-in-law decided they were going to turn all the news off. They didn't want their kids to see any of it. They didn't want them to know anything about what was happening. Well, and the kids were 5 and 7, and the little 7-year-old went to school the next day, and she came home. She was mad at her mother because her mother hadn't told her what had happened or anything that had gone on about that shooting that was just about a mile and a half away from them in the mall. And so... So my daughter called and says, "Mother, what should I do?" And so then by the time we were thinking about it, then the Sandy Hook incident happened, and I thought, well, I ought to write something to kind of help parents and teachers and help professional people know what to do when something like this happened, because this is a hard thing to know how to handle it or how to help kids through tragedy. And they're not only the national tragedies, but then there's the individual tragedies in kids' life, like, divorce or death of a grandparent or loss of a pet or, just many things like that that happen. So that's essentially how it was born.
And I also think it's very helpful with the other situations that we've been having. There's been so many school shootings, and we thought that it was going to end of 2013, but obviously it picked right back up in this year. And then not only that, with Trayvon Martin and the other individuals who have been killed. So I think this is something that really will help children along the way. And I'm glad that you brought out a book like this. This is very helpful.
Well, and then we have to also think of the other things. There's always tornadoes and typhoons and, there's all those kinds of things, the disasters. Our daughter, who lives just outside of Philadelphia, they didn't go to school for 10 days and had no power for 4 or 5 days because of the snowstorm. So, there are those kind of things that happen, too.
Oh, yes. Now, why why was this book needed? This book was just necessarily needed for children to overcome their tragedies, Christy.
Well, I think it's important because a lot of times as parents we just think about, oh, what am I going to tell my kid? Or what am I going to say to him? Or should I turn the news off? Or should I turn the news back on? And those are the only questions that enter a parent's mind. And really the most important things, at least for me, are to say to your child, well, how are you feeling? Or what's going on inside? Or I'll bet that was scary. And just listen to what the child has to say and validate them, because we may have some big speech prepared, and they may not need that speech. They may have some other little question that we've never thought about. So we need to listen and hear what the child's fears are, and then help them face that fear. Talk about it.
And sometimes I think it's hard as a parent to really communicate, because you're thinking of big words, but you're trying to find the small words to communicate with them. Well, love, let me explain. This is the way this happened, and this was wrong. So how do you, as a parent, how can you get your child or children to express their feelings?
Well, there's so many ways, and you know, that's a question that the answer to that question is such an excellent question, and the answer to it is going to be different for every single kid, because sometimes you've got a rough-and-tumble little boy, and the only way he's going to get his feelings out is to get out there on the basketball court or take his soccer ball or his football or whatever and pound the pavement running, or he's going to have a physical way to release that. And so in the book I've got a couple of silly things like kicking a pile of dirty clothes and you know, beating your pillow or things like that, and those are okay things for some kids, but other kids may need just large muscle activities to get through it. And then sometimes children love to write, and so they'll keep a journal. And sometimes art is really a good way to help kids through it. If you give the more tactile the art medium, like if you give them finger paint or tempera paint or Play-Doh, those are all real tactile, and so kids can punch the Play-Doh or smear the finger paint around, and that'll get a lot of feelings out. Where if you just have little colored pencils or crayons, that's going to help, but not nearly like the more tactile art mediums.
Well, now, Kristen, not trying to get off the subject as much, but as a parent, how do you handle a child's behavior besides just always disciplining them with a belt or a switch?
Well, I think you have to look beyond when you see a child's misbehavior, you want to look to the unmet need, because always if you've got misbehavior, there's an unmet need. And maybe the unmet need is loneliness or a need for attention or they're hurting inside or they're scared or who knows what their unmet need is. But this is where you got to talk to the kid and find out what his unmet need is. Now, right in the moment, you can't do that. If a kid's angry and acting out, that isn't the time. When the child is calm, then you say, you know, what was going on with you? How come that you were so upset? And then the kid's going to, you know what their answer is going to be? They always give the same answer. Their answer is, I don't know. And so, so then you think, back to square one. But then you make educated guesses. You may say, well, I wonder if you were just too tired, or maybe you were hungry, or I'll bet that hurt your feelings when so-and-so didn't come over to play with you, or I'll bet you were really sad because you lost the ball game. So then you make an educated guess. And the kid may not tell you yes to what you say, but you'll see a little recognition smile on his face. And if you see his little corners of his mouth or her mouth turn up a little, then you know you hit pay dirt. You got it.
Okay.
And then you know how to fix whatever the problem is.
Okay. See, that would be a great advice for me, because I try to do different measurements besides always going about disciplining my girls that way. And I'm like, I need answers. I need other advice, because they always tend to fight. And when I ask them, like you said, you ask them, well, what's wrong? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but she was fighting for something, so.
Well, and a lot of times kids fight for attention. Yeah. The book that I have that's coming out the 1st of June is a family counsel's book. It's a book on how to hold family meetings and how to talk to your kids and how to work on, you know, family problems. And so I'd love to come back and talk about that book when that comes out. But that will be really a good help for parents. But, yeah, I hear your frustration. And sometimes, you know, it's really hard. At least I think it is. We had five girls in a row in mm-hmm. our family. And when you get the same sex kids, there's competition, and you try not to make competition, but there is competition between them, and so then sometimes they just fight. And so there's some answers in that book coming out. But I do hear your frustration, because that's a hard thing to know how to handle it.
It is, and as many of the guests that I have had on my show, from parenting children, parents who have children with ADHD, because that's what my girls were supposedly diagnosed with.
Yeah.
And I have read the book, you know, I try to do the positive reinforcement, then it gets to the point like, okay, this won't seem to be working, and I try to be patient, because it's two of them, and they're twin girls, and they're eight, and it's It's like, okay, come in the house, do your homework. No, don't come in the house and do your homework. We got to fuss about a pencil. We got to argue about this paper first. And I'm like, okay, we'll get the book. That's my first response. Try to get the book and read it. And I try to do some woo-saw. I figured that I'm just, this is a thing of parenting that I will have to keep practicing.
Well, I think when you've got the ADHD, you have to keep it's really good what you're doing is to say homework before anything else, so you keep to a definite routine.
Okay.
And sometimes I think you just say, you know, I'm not going to argue with you about this. Here's your stuff. You got to get it done. And then I always like to have something fun for them to do when they get that done. So maybe they do want to go out, and we'll go to the park and run the dog, or we'll go play soccer, or they can go to dancing lessons or ice skating lessons, or I don't know, whatever you've got planned, so that they know there's something positive. But they're not going to get to do it unless they sit down and get their homework done. And, you know, kids that age, your children are probably very smart. They're probably bright, because the kids that argue the most are the ones that are the smartest, I think. So it's a mental thing for them. And so sometimes you just have to say, you know, I don't want to argue with you about this. Here it is. Get it done, and then we'll go do X or Y.
Yeah, that's how I am. I'm not going to keep talking to you or keep telling you over and over to get it done. So I'm just going to let you get it done. And if you take longer, then you won't be able to do the other activities that
exactly.
I would love for you to do.
Perfect.
Are there any personal insights on why maybe these certain tragedies affect children?
Oh, you know, I think it's hard for us to understand them. I mean, I don't understand it. It wrenches my heart out to see these kinds of things happen to children. Well, and to adults, too. It's just makes
mm-hmm.
me so sad inside. And I've got enough, I'm an adult enough that I can sort of understand what's going on in the world. But I feel bad for kids, because they don't have any idea what's happening. They don't have, their brain isn't mature yet. They don't get the whole world and what's going on. And so we have to, you know, we have to really empathize with them and validate their feelings, because they can't hardly make sense of it all. And like a lot of times, neither can we. So giving them a chance to talk it out, I think, is really a good. And I love the artwork. I think that's always good. And kids always need the physical activity.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I'm playing and markers and stuff.
Yeah, here's another thing that I had happen that I think is interesting, too. Sometimes we leave this out. Kids sometimes have to play through things. They role play. You know how when they're little, they'll play dolls, or they'll play house, or, you know, those that play their racing their cars or whatever. But kids a lot of times will play things. I have my mother just passed away not too long ago, and the grandkids were really devastated her great-grandkids, they were my grandkids, were devastated by, you know, watching this whole process. And so one day I came home from someplace and they were playing death. And they were playing that they were having a funeral, and so they were kind of role-playing all the way through it all. So I think we, and it was a good way for them to kind of work through it themselves and kind of set it to rest. And so I think this is another good way that we sometimes forget that kids just need to role-play through things. And so they may pull their Barbies out, and you might may find them, you know, working through some of these things, but they're just trying to make sense of it the best they can.
Okay. Now, that I do understand, because they love to role play, and they'll come and tell me, well, the other one is, she's playing dead, and I'm like, oh, don't do that. Like, I don't want to think about the death part, but I think that, like you said, that's their way to express themselves, and if that's how they have to do it, then it's not so bad.
Yeah, that's true. And that's what you think. You think, oh, no, don't do that. But then I take myself out. I just calm myself down a little bit and say, okay, Christy, it's okay, because that's what they're doing. They're just trying to make sense of it.
Now, I love the book. I love the artwork. Now, how did you and Lori, am I saying her last name right, Nawin?
Yeah, that's good. That's better than I did at first.
I try to make sure I get people's names right. I take my time out, too. How did you two come to collaborate?
Well, when you write picture books, unless you are a writer and an artist, you don't really have anything to say about the artwork. Lori and I don't live too far from each other, and we're pretty good friends, but I didn't know she was going to do the artwork for the book until she was assigned to it and was doing it. And she told me about it one day, and I thought, that's my book. So the publisher decides who the artist is going to be and gets that all set up. But, she is such a darling person, and she's really good. Her artwork, at least I love it. I think it's beautiful. And I like the little characters that she put in, because they're endearing, the little ducks and, you know, the penguins and things. Those are good images for kids, and I think comforting for them.
Yeah, because they identify better with animals and of that sort. So I thought that was a wonderful idea, too. I really admired it.
Yeah.
Christy, how long have you been writing?
Well, I've been writing for about 6 or 7 years, and, you know, it's like learning to do anything. It took me a few years before I got pretty good at it. Well, not that I'm pretty good at it, or I'm not wonderful, but I'm getting better and better at it. You just have to practice at it. So I've spent a few years practicing, and now my books are starting to be published, and I'm having a wonderful time at it. So it's fun for me.
I know, because you, besides this one, you have so many other children's books, too. So people, make sure you Google Christy, my son, because she has so many other wonderful children's books out there that I think that everyone should have a hold of.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Now, Christy, as far as it goes with counseling, how long have you been doing that?
Well, I went back to school in the 1980s after my kids were all in school. Then I went back to get my master's degree, and then I worked as an intern there in Las Vegas. We were living in Las Vegas at the time, and then I established my practice there, and really did enjoy working with people and meeting people, and it was good for me too, because when I was kind of backward, my husband was always the one who was a social person of us, and I was just kind of stayed in the background. And, you know, it was good for me to kind of get out on my own and become who I was going to be, rather than just always being in the shadows. It was good for me.
Now, how did your role as a mother play in this book?
Well, I think you're getting a lot of experience with your girls, and the same with my kids. You have some problems as you go along. Nobody ever gets raised perfect, and so I it really has influenced me a lot. And it was so helpful in my counseling practice because people would say, well, my kid's doing this, or I did counsel quite a few children, and it was really good because I had had experience with my own kids of how to do it, and so it's very helpful.
It sure is, and I'm glad that there are self-help books out there because it is. It's hard being a parent. You can have them, but the parenting part is the one that really gets you.
It's true, and I remember being just like you when my kids were at home. I think, oh, I got to get that book out. I can't do this. I'm on my last straw of patience. You have to read. At least I had to have things to read, just like you did. I just have to read again and say, okay, I can do this, and take a big deep breath, and off I go again.
Yes. Krista, I'm glad someone understands, yes. Now, Krista has been a retired family counselor. How did that practice help you write this book?
Well, I drew a lot. As I worked with children, I worked with quite a few children, and I worked with children who had been abused, and so that just little things like the artwork, I did a lot of art therapy with the young children that I had. For instance, I had a little girl that had been sexually assaulted by an older stepbrother, and she was only four. She was just a little kid, and so we had the clay out, and she would build that kid out of the clay, and then she'd smash him down and say, leave me alone, leave me alone. And she just did that in her therapy sessions over and over and over until she had released all the feelings that were in there. So I just learned a little bit as time went along, and of course at workshops and conferences and classes, how important that art is to help kids work through their feelings. And the same with journaling. And my clients taught me a lot about the journaling, because they were so creative, things I would never think of. When I think of a journal, I just think of getting your notebook and you start to write in it. But I had people and children that did art, that loved their art, and so they'd make sketchbooks rather than writing. And some kids were into crafts, and so they'd come with their paper and glue and all of whatever they put together to show me, because the crafting was a way that they worked through their feelings. So I think we always have to try to think outside the box with our children.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go off on some direction that I think to myself, wow, I would never have thought of that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. And you're right. We do have to find other ways. It's always like what a mother has to do or what we need to do to really interact with our children. And sometimes it's hard for me because I work so much. Like right now, I'm on a 10-day stretch, so they're mostly home with dad. But at the same time, child always needs their mother, and I feel like I'm neglecting them. And it's like, oh, this job has me on so many days. I wish you would understand that I have little ones at home to attend to, and that's hard. And I do try to talk to them, Krista, about that. Okay, mom is not always at home. I have to work to make money because I don't want them to grow up and say, well, mom, you never was there. Is there any help with that situation, Krista?
Oh, that just rings a bell for me, because after I did get back to school, I always felt guilty. I would think, oh, I'm not there enough for them. Is this okay for the kids? Maybe I'm not doing good enough. Maybe I'm not with them enough. So I totally relate to that. That just vibrates inside of me too. So I totally hear you. But the thing that I think is important is that you are setting a precedence for these kids. I love that women are coming out of their shells and becoming active in society and working and making a difference in the world. And I just kind of get goosebumps inside of me when I think of that, because I admire what you're doing and I think it's wonderful. And I would like you to look at the legacy that you're leaving for your children, because these kids are going to know, look what my mom did. Look how awesome she is. And so then they're going to want to be those same kind of people. So yes, you want to be there as much as you can, and yes, you want to talk to your kids about it, but I think you're leaving a marvelous legacy for your children, and I think what a gift you're giving them.
And I do. I try my best because I know that I was attending school, and I went and got my associate's, and then I went and got my bachelor's. Now it's back into the workforce, so I know they're always noticing that. I would never forget one day, because I worked for the Marriott, and they had me working 14 days. And one of my daughters, she just came out and said, "Mom, are you home today? Are you home with us today?" And I was like, "No." And it really made me feel bad because I'm like, I got to go back to work. And now it's just a recontinuance of it over again. It's like, okay, I'm back on 10-day stress, so I will be at work before they even get out of school at 2:30 today.
Yeah. And you do. You feel guilty and you feel bad. But I just,
do.
You know, I just, women have been oppressed through the ages of the earth for so long, and different societies have been more, or different cultures have been more oppressed than others cultures have. And so when you break out of that mold and you're off and doing your thing like this podcast, I just admire you and send you a hug and a high five. I think it's awesome. And I think you talk to your girls about that. You talk to them about how they can make a difference in the world, because you are making a difference in the world. And I just admire and laud you for what you're doing, and that you're doing your education. You know, that's the ticket to wherever you want to go, is that education. So good job for you.
Thank you. Now, Chris, I would like to know, what was the length of time to write the book?
Well, this one came, like I told you, after my daughter called me and said, "Help, what am I going to do?" And so it took me a couple of weeks to put it together. And I have, when you're a writer, at least for me, I have to have my critique groups, the people, the other writers that I work with. And so I have my picture book group that I meet with, and they say, and they come back and tell me, "Oh, I don't understand this," or "You didn't say that right," or "Fix this right here," or "That's too much of a break," or whatever they tell me about it. And so it takes 2 or 3 weeks by the time you write it and then get it to your group, and then you rewrite it again and rewrite it one more time. And so it's a good long process.
Well, that seems like, well, it is, as far as what I have heard from authors, it's a process. But is
That's
it much
correct.
Easier? But Krista, is it much easier when you kind of sort of put yourself into the book?
Yes. And I don't think there's ever a time, well, maybe there is with some authors, but I always put myself into my books, whether I'm writing fiction, it's if I'm living it, or whether the self-help books, you put yourself right into it. And then my counseling book, the Becoming Free book, and this Family Counsels book that's coming out, they're all parts of me that are in that. And I include myself. It isn't like I'm this expert telling you what to do. It's like I'm one of you, and we're just all kind of muddling along through this together to be the very best that we can be. So, you put yourself in the book, and then sometimes I have to go back and read them myself. I read my, just like you do, you get your book out and read it one more time and think, okay, I can do this, because it's all of us working through it together.
Yes, it is. Now, Christy, jumping back to the tragedies that we have encountered for the past years and this year as well, how can one really look at the positive side of it all? Because sometimes it's hard when you don't went through that negative aspect. You just given up the hope. You lost your child to a school shooting. What are some things that can help the parent along the way?
Well, there's some stages of grief. First, we're in denial, and then we're angry, and then we bargain, and finally we accept. So there's some stages of grief that we do go through, that all of us go through. And I love, I think if you look around for the positive, I New Orleans was such an awful experience for so many people, and yet I was on the internet one day, and looking at the pictures that were on the news, and so here's this big, humongous tree that's fallen over, and the end of it's been cut off, and so somebody took a bucket of paint and put a great big smiley face on the end of that tree that was sticking up. And so I think things like that are really good for me. I have read some about the Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, you know, and that was started by a woman whose son was killed by a drunk driver. And so many times we find people who have taken the tragedy in their lives and have turned it to the best. I just have been listening to a book, an autobiography of Helen Hayes, and the First Lady of Theater, and I like biographies because they are inspiring to me. And her daughter died of pneumonia when she was 22, and she was just devastated by that. But Jonas Salk wrote her a letter and said that because of her daughter's death, of course she was a big celebrity, and of course because of her daughter's death, he had received a lot of money for grants and donations, and he, of course, then developed the polio vaccine that has helped all of our kids be safe. And so I think as we go through the grieving process, then I think we have to turn and find some way that we can make the world a better place from the tragedy that's happened. We have to dig down inside and find the strength. And in the last two pages of the book, I say light is always stronger than dark, and love is always stronger than hate. And Martin Luther King, I do admire him so much, and he had, I've got a quote on my blog right now, I don't have it right with me, but he just said something to the effect, and you probably can quote it better than I can, that it took too much energy to hate. Love is just so much easier and so much stronger. And so I think we eventually have to turn and find the positive. I think you dig down deep inside your soul and say, what can I learn from this? And, you know, we gain strength and we're refined from the tragedies that we go through.
Yeah. And it is. And those are some good little steps to actually go through. But I know it takes time to really just get over it. It took some time for me when I lost one of my best friends to get over it. And, you know, you don't really want to tell a person, oh, I know how you feel, because you might don't. Or
exactly.
They always told me, and another one, they always told me, don't tell people that they found a better place, God has found a better place for them, because, you know, everybody's religion is different, so you want to be careful how you use that.
Yeah, those are both good points, because don't say, oh, I'm so sorry, I know how you feel, because you don't know how they feel, and so that's good. And then I agree with you 100%. I feel like we can't say, oh, you know, life is better for them now on the other side, or I don't know, whatever, because we really don't know what their belief system is, and they have to come to that themselves. And so, again, like I said in the beginning with children, I think you just have to validate them and where they're coming from, and then they'll let you know what their feelings are. And adults have to do that too. They have to work through their feelings themselves, and then they'll come to reframe as time goes along and find the positive light in what's happened. But there's a while where they're going through the dark. I know in some of the hard things that I've experienced, the tragedies in my life, I'm not going to tell you that it's all nice and wonderful in the beginning. I have to get all the way through and then see the perspective from the other end, and then I can put a positive spin on it, but not until.
Exactly. I just hope everybody does get this book, Love, Hugs, and Hope, because this way, this will help children to cope. And I hope it will be one of the answers to get to everyone. And besides just the school shootings, I just get tired of just basically looking at the news on children getting kidnapped, parents murdering their children. It's just becoming redundant now. It's just getting out of hand. But, you know, I was listening to your interviews where you said your son and daughter-in-law ended up turning off the television because they didn't want their children to watch the news. Is it advisable to let your children know what's going on? Should they watch the news, or you advise not to?
Well, I think every family has to kind of make that decision for themselves. The thing that I think is important is that you don't leave the television on 24/7 for them to see it happening over and over and over again. But my little granddaughter, our little granddaughter, she was mad because her mother didn't let her know what was going on. So I do think it's important that you talk about these things a little bit so that the kids know, and then they can, you know, and you try to help them make as good a sense as they can out of it, if there's any sense to be made out of some of it. So they need to know what's going on. They want to be part of their world. And you know, kids are all different, and maybe you see this with your girls, but some of them are totally interested in what is happening in the world and want to know about current events, and others of them could care less. So every child is a little different.
Mm-hmm. I do agree. Oh, now, Christy, getting back to your book, how did you get introduced to Familia? Am I saying it right? Familia?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Familia.
Yeah. I was at a conference, and I like to go to conferences, and so I was at a conference where someone that I was in a group, one of the more famous authors had said to me, oh, do you want to, you know, why don't you send it to this publisher? So I thought, okay, the reason I send it, and the reason I thought this would be a good publisher is this publisher does things for families. That's all they publish. They publish things about the family and for the family and activities with the family and the parents and the grandparents. This is all about families. And if I can have any impact at all in a little drop, like a little drop in the ocean, I would want it to be with families to help improve the quality of family life. So that was the reason that I have gone to them. I really like working with them. I think they're wonderful.
They seem to be. And as far as what I've seen, all your books seem to be very creative. I basically like all the illustrations of your book. Was Lori part of all the other illustrations too, or it was different illustrators?
No, she did all of them.
Oh, wow. She's good.
Yeah, she is good. And she's done... if you get on Familia, she's funny. She's got tell your listeners to go to the Familia's website, because there's a lot of information about families. There's blogs and minute inspirations, and there's a lot of things about families on there that I think are very good. But Lori's got a couple of recipe books out there. So we have our little picture book critique group, because of course she's in that. And so we go to her house, and she's got her kitchen all a mess. She's making the recipes that she's putting in her cookbook. So she's got several cookbooks out that are.
Oh, those are my favorite. I love cookbooks. I love when I have the time. I love to do a recipe. I do. I have no problem with that. But Christy, how did you end up start writing? Was it a part of you of your childhood?
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the Internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect to Compete and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on with Christy. We got disconnected, but we're back.
I don't know what happened. All of a sudden you were gone. I was just talking away. I don't know when you lost me. But
I was talking. I said, wait a minute. I don't hear anything. I said, let me shoot to a commercial. Chris, I was asking before we got disconnected, was writing a part of your childhood?
I loved to write when I was a little kid. I just really enjoyed that. And, you know, as I look in retrospect at who I was, I loved writing as a child, and I loved writing as a teenager. And then when I got to college, I loved my class in children's literature. And then I kind of got myself off task, and I married, and, you know, I went off in another direction. But writing was always something that I wanted to do since I was a little kid. And I kind of disconnected from myself, I think, as women do sometimes. And so then it took me a while to get back to this connection that I love. And it just has been an interesting journey for me, because I have, through my maturity, come to really know myself and what I wanted and who I was. And so it took me a while to get back to who I wanted to become. And I'm an old lady now, but I'm getting there.
Now, growing up, you said you went to the cabin to see your grandfather and everything. So what was that like?
Oh, we had my grandfather and father had a farm in Idaho, and so we would go there to the cabin, and we had a lot of fun there. It was a good time, a really good place for the kids to run and play. And I think sometimes our kids are raised now with so much scariness around. I mean, we've had a kid patrolling our neighborhood that has supposedly is after the young girls, and so now the parents have to take their kids to school and pick them up after school. And you know, the big cities sometimes are a little bit frightening. So it was nice to be there to just kind of let the kids run and roam the fields. I think it's wonderful when children have a chance to do that as they're growing up.
Well, the city is too fast, but in the country it's more relaxed, and you learn more responsibilities because it's not as, I would say, as much of an advantage like you would have in the city. Everything is mostly given here, but in the country, to me, you have to work. Because when I went to my mother's hometown, I think that was Dayton, Tennessee, and it definitely seemed country. I was like, oh, my God, I'm not used to this. I was like, oh, no, can I go back to the city? I'm actually a city girl, and they recognize that, too.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's good for us to have to work a little bit. They have to get out. The kids have to get out, and they have to clear the dead branches off the lawn in our cabin, and they have to mow the lawn, and they got the wood. They have to chop the wood if we're going to have a campfire. You know, they got to work a little, and I think that's good for them.
Yeah. They need to learn more responsibilities. I wish I could. If I had the option, I would love to go to the country.
Yeah.
I would.
Yeah, it's
on their responsibility.
Yeah, it's good. And so then, but I love what you're doing, because I think it's important for kids to learn to work in the city. And part of their job is to get their homework done, and they got to know that that's their job. They have to do it.
They do. They actually do. And how I actually get mine, when they come to me, oh, mommy, I have a problem, because see, what they like to do is play. And I tell them, okay, are you doing your homework? Yes. And then I catch them playing. And then they come to me, well, I have this problem. So I make them go back. I need you to think about it, because while you were playing, you could have been doing your homework. So that's the option I give them. Either we're going to play or we're going to do the homework. We can't do both.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good, because then they don't stay on task. And again, that's for the ADHD. That's important to teach them to stay on task. I think that really matters.
Yeah, besides trying to put them on the medicine part, so I try to wean from that.
Yeah, well, and then I'm sure you watch their diet. And, you know, mm-hmm. they espouse what you feed these kids. But you know what? I think that's a really good thing for everybody. I mean, the more, if it doesn't matter if they've got ADHD or not, I think we have to give kids a good diet. I think that really matters. If you're giving them a lot of white sugar and white flour and, you know, junk, then kids are going to be hyper. It's not good for them. They need good foods, just like the rest of us do.
I definitely try to keep them off the processed foods and try to bring in more foods that are organic, that's gluten-free. And sometimes it gets hard, because trying to stay on a budget can be an issue, but I always try to keep them. And that seems to be the hard thing.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a very good, a very important point. Because when you're feeding them organic and whole foods, and it costs more money to do that. The other foods are cheaper a lot of times.
Now, Chrissy, did you get any snow this coming year?
We are in a drought. We live in the West. We live in the Salt Lake City area, and we are in a drought right now. And so we haven't had the snow. And I feel bad, because I talked to my daughter in Philadelphia, who lives outside of Philadelphia, and she says they've got so many feet of snow. And I say, we haven't got any snow, and it's 60 degrees here today. So we haven't had any. There's one more thing that I would like to say about tragedies. Oh. Just an example, if you don't mind.
Well,
I read it. When I was back at my daughter's in Philadelphia one time, there was an article in the newspaper about a little girl who had been kidnapped in inner city Philadelphia, and she was a spunky thing. I wish I could have met her and given her a high five. She did so good. Her kidnappers took her and tied her up and put her in an abandoned building.
Oh.
And so rather than just cower and be there and be, you know, just afraid and just succumb to what happened, she broke a window and then with a broken glass, she sawed through the ropes that had her tied, and she got away. And I think, my gosh, what an awesome kid, because she had some spunk. And so I love kids that have spunk, and I don't think you teach spunk. I don't know how you would teach spunk, But I just think sometimes we have to watch our children, and as they're being spunky, I think we have to admire them for that, mm-hmm. because that's a wonderful thing. And because of course there I am in my counseling practice, and I've got all these kids who have been abused and all of the bad things that have happened to them, and I think, here's a girl that is spunky, and she just got out of that, and I think, yes, that's awesome.
Yep. That is. That was very awesome, because you would never have thought, no time in a million years with the age and the mind ability, that she would have thought of something like that. But children would surprise you in so many ways.
Yeah. And like I say, I don't think you can teach spunk, but mm-hmm. when you see your kids being that way, I think, you know, sometimes we want to put them down and squelch that, but that was a lesson to me to say, you know, when I worked in my practice with my people after that, I thought, you know, I'm going to teach them about spunk. We're going to talk about spunk. We're going to talk about solving your problems and getting out of tight situations if you can. So, I don't know. I just admired that girl, and she's made a difference in my life, and hopefully did in quite a few people's lives just from being spunky.
Oh, yes. And that's amazing. And she actually was wait a minute, Chrissy, you said she was actually abducted and tied up?
Yeah, she was abducted and tied up and put in an abandoned building. And I don't remember why. I don't know if the kidnappers were looking for ransom or what. I can't remember that part of the story. And, of course, it was quite a few years ago. But still, I think, oh, my gosh, that's awesome.
Okay, just
and not that we want to, yeah, not that we want to have kids put themselves in harm's way at all. I think we have to be careful on that part. But you know, if we have a chance to praise their spunkiness and their creativity and that kind of thing, I think we ought to do it.
Yeah, because I always try to practice with my going over 911 and telling them, okay, if I fall out, if something happens, it's what you need to do. I need you call this. And sometimes I think they don't listen to me, but I in my heart, I really want to believe the trash are listening, and I make them practice over the phone numbers, my husband and mine, so we can get used
good
to it, and practice with my phone, because I know our phones are totally different. I showed them how to go on it, press certain buttons, because I know I have the iPhone, so I try to go over it. And you're right, when it comes to that, what you just said, you don't know how she actually got there, that just came to mind. You really have to watch your children these days. My mother was the kind it used to actually upset me when she would watch me. Every time I would go outside, she'd be outside. She'd be right in the window looking at me. I'm like, really? Mom, come on. You could go back. I'm right here in the yard. I'm the only one playing by myself because she wasn't really too much let me hang around with people. So I'm playing catch by myself. Had all these toys, but I'm still playing by myself. But she would actually be sitting right down the window, and I thank her for that because now times are really troublesome now because kids are getting kidnapped, as we mentioned before. So you're going to have to keep your eyes on it because I almost got a scare when I was in the store shopping, and one of the twins ran off, and I got on her. I literally just jerked her by the arm and told her, don't you ever do that again because that scared me. Because it's so,
yes,
you have Amazon, I don't know, and people selling children across seas, sex trafficking. So I really got alarmed when she ran off, and I told her, don't ever do that in your life. Run off, getting anything. And she was just smiling so happy, and at the same time, I'm panicking.
That's so true. And that was probably a good experience for both of you because it hopefully scared her enough when you were upset to know that you don't ever, ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, and I appreciate our law enforcement officers. You know, I told you we've had this trouble in our neighborhood here where there's a stalker. And so I had taken the kids over, my little grandkids over to the church. There was they had an after-school little craft meeting that they were going to have there. And the policeman came along, and he pulled in the parking lot and asked me what I was doing, and I thought, you know, this is awesome that they are looking out for kids and what's happening. So I love that our law enforcement people are supporting us and helping us with that. I think it's wonderful.
It is, and I'm glad that we have hired so many police officers in Atlanta, so I say I commend them for their services and everything, looking out, always staying on task.
Absolutely.
The ones who had to provide their services during the school shooting who might have lost their lives, my heart and my condolences still go out to the families for that.
I know.
Well, Chrissy, getting back to your books again, what is mainly the goal in, when you're writing these books? Is it for entertainment or education, or could it be for both?
Well, yeah, you have to have – that's an excellent, excellent question because it has to be somewhat entertaining or kids are not going to be interested in it or enjoy them. But then you want to have some education there also. And if we can just make just a little difference in the world, if we can just help the children be able to open up the communication between parents and children, you know, that's an important thing. And when I do book signings, I have been surprised – this book just sells out in a hurry when I'm doing a book signing at, you know, Costco or Sam's Club or wherever, because people want to open up that communication with their children or with their grandchildren. And so I hope that is the message that gets across, is that this is such a good way to open up the communication and help parents and children, grandparents and grandchildren be able to talk to each other. And that's the goal.
And that's always the best goal, because sometimes we don't talk to our children and they stray they stray away from you and they end up out here on the street that we don't want them to. We don't want them to be a victim. They become vulnerable. Yeah. So we, and you're right. It's best get in your children's business. I don't care if they don't like it. Get in their business. My mom stayed in my diary. She stayed in my diary. I'm like, golly. I even tried to put the lock on it. It still didn't work.
You give your mama a high five, and I give your mama a high five. Good for her.
Yes, I do. And I think my well-beings are rubbing off on her herself. Now times are changing where you have more better solutions to, where you have better solutions to talk to your children instead of going about the switches, because I wish that was around for my time, because I'm going to be honest, Kristen, I didn't approve of those switches. I didn't, but I didn't get them all the time. That it would have to be something really terrible for my mother to really get me with the switch. So I didn't get them all the time. But when I did get them, I was like, "Oh, here we go! Can we make them quick?"
Yeah, it's true. Times have changed. That's true. Yeah. And I love the amount of education that's out there now, because we know another way, and I love that we know it.
Yes. Before we get off the air, is there anything else you would like the listeners to know about you or your books?
No, I would like them to know that I really appreciate you, and I admire you for your having this program and doing this. People can go to my website if they're interested in my books and check them out. And there are some articles on the website that they can print out of how to talk to your kids about divorce and how to talk to your kids about death and how to talk to your kids about tragedy. And they can go on the website and print those out. So there's that information that's there for them. And so I encourage them to, it's just www.christymonson.com. And
well, thank you.
So I would love for people to do that.
I appreciate that. Well, this is not the last time you will hear from Kristen Monson, because she will be back in March on the 3rd, and we will be talking about her second book, about one of her other books, Becoming Free, A Woman's Guide to Internal Strength, and we might even get a little bit of information on her upcoming book, which will be in June, or we might wait to June for that one. But, Kristen, thank you so much for being here with us, and God bless you and your family.
Oh, same to you, and thank you so much for having me. I just really appreciate and admire you. I've just really enjoyed myself. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Now, coming up tomorrow, we will have Jana Flank. She is a survivor ovarian cancer, and she will tell you how to beat the odds. So please stay tuned tomorrow at 12 o'clock p.m., and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.